8. Like a fucking stalker. In a tunnel under a tube station in East London, excavations for the Elizabeth Line had uncovered what was widely accepted to be the most complete temple of Orpheus outside Italy. It dated from the dying of the light, the period when Roman forces were pulling out of Britain, and the old saw that the young would know less than they did. They did not have the skills or the resources to teach the Roman sciences, technologies, even literacy to the children. It was a terrifying time, and the Temple of Orpheus showed it. The mosaic floors depicted stories of the end of hope, Dido hurling herself from the walls of Carthage, Pentheus torn apart by the forces of unreason, wise King Oedipus putting out his own eyes. The story of Orpheus is the story of a poet, a musician, an augur, someone who taught humanity the arts of medicine, writing, and agriculture, trying to rescue just one person from the all-devouring forces of death. It is the story of his failing. Jun had been coming to this place for nearly a decade. She'd written her master's thesis on these damp tunnels and vaulted arches, not a fact she ever shared with her online community, for there had to be some part of herself she kept private. She decided at demolition that she should be less online for a while, as the nonsense on the internet settled down. So she was back here, where people knew her, at the celebration party for the completed preservation work on the murals in the two upper galleries. What she didn't expect was to see Martha Einkorn there. It was a wild night. Give archaeologists corporate money to celebrate and see what you get. In this case, they had an East London art piece. On black bungee cords suspended from the scaffolding that still covered all but 5 of the arches, 2 men swung together, met, held hands, then somersaulted as one man used the other's thighs to push off into an acrobatic arc through the curved space. Italian disco music from the 1970s played on huge speakers, giving the whole performance, coming together, pulling apart, using each other to launch even farther, the air of a comedy. It was warm enough in the arches, despite the dirty snow and slush outside. There was always something going on in London. Tonight, 3 nights after the end of demolition, this party, thrown by the East London Archaeological Survey in honor of sponsors who hadn't turned up and wouldn't turn up, had been the most appealing item on the menu. There was always another chance to see the temple, but every chance was good. People knew her here, home turf, friendly. No one would care when she got exhausted from talking to other humans and let herself through the side door into the underworld, the lower galleries where the mosaics got really weird. It wasn't a large event. There must have been about 100 people there. But as the crowd shifted, Jun saw that one of them was Martha. Of course, Fantail was on the list of sponsors. She had no time to compose her face or decide whether she actually wanted to see her. It had been 3 days, definitely not long enough to send another text if she wanted to look cool. Above their heads, the acrobats flipped over in unison. Martha stepped backward to get a better view. She looked behind her. She met Jun's eyes. "Here I am," thought Jun, "standing a few meters behind you, like a fucking stalker." Martha blinked. Jun could feel that her face looked idiotic but couldn't figure out how to fix it. Smile? Raise her eyebrows in surprise? Try to look bored or even disdainful, like the kind of cool girl you'd enjoy having as your girlfriend because she'd never, ever bother you? She somehow tried all of those at once, and she knew she was making the exact face that trolls online told her made her look like a donkey. Great. She waited for Martha to smile faintly and turn back to the man next to her. But Martha didn't. She said a couple of words to her companion, who melted into the crowd, and Martha Einkorn pushed through the people to Jun. "What are the chances?" "Sorry," said Jun. "Are you following me? Because this is not cool. I am a very important, significant person, and you can't keep harassing me like this." Martha laughed, a dark, husky rasp. Lang's foundation is a sponsor. He's in Borneo. I thought I'd hang around for this. Sounded intriguing. Ideas and civilizations that just disappeared. Trying to bring the temple back from the brink of destruction. It's not a problem, but did you know I was going to be here? Jun drew in a breath. Oh, no. You don't want to play with me on this one. I mean, if you did, it's still nice. Jun wiggled her jaw from side to side. You want to see my master's thesis on Orphic influences on early Christianity as evidenced by the Orphic Temple at Seven Kings? I mean, yeah? Jun Smart flashed the whole document to the screen in the cuff of Martha's immaculate cream jacket. Martha flipped through the first few pages. Seriously? Said Martha. This isn't some quick faked up AI thing for a joke. I'm actually on the advisory board here. You can ask anyone. So this is a genuine meet cute? Re-meet cute, I think you'll find. Hey, do you want to see the weird mosaics? My God, I've never wanted anything more. Never? Martha grinned and put out her hand. Jun took it. They fit together, palm to palm. Downstairs, Jun flicked on the floodlights. The real problem down here was keeping the river roading from finding its way into the temple. Half of the mosaic pavements had been barely uncovered. The discovery of the lower floor itself and the steps down to what must have been the most sacred part of the structure, meant for initiates only, had been unexpected and exciting. Jun led Martha by the hand across the slippery planks placed on risers to protect the pavement and toward the massive stone at the center of a high-ceilinged room. Take a seat? Level with me, said Martha. Is that an altar? Jun rolled her eyes. The archaeologist never says that anything is something. All we can say is, may have been used for ritual purposes. Was one of those ritual purposes possibly sacrificing? Jun shrugged. You can write a paper on it. I could probably find you some funding. Martha laughed. Jun loved that laugh, the throaty fullness of it. It was a laugh she'd like to have in her life. Look, it's the only place in the room we can stay for more than a moment without damaging the mosaics. And yes, probably an altar. Sit down. Martha sat down. Jun sat next to her, their hands touching, their arms touching, their legs pressed against each other. This couldn't be a coincidence, or at least it felt like one that meant something. For Martha to come here by chance. Jun had loved this place from the moment she saw it, when it was only half uncovered, overgrown, and smelled of dog shit. She'd loved the grandeur of it, the romance, of course, something saved from the deep past. The sense that human beings from 2,000 years ago were doing now what they'd always done, sending a message through the darkness, trying to reach, well, in this case, her. She'd volunteered here as an undergraduate, hoping she'd be allowed to use the little brushes to clean away the dirt. But of course, she'd mostly been making tea and sifting through the discarded earth pile with a tea strainer to find and carefully label even the tiniest fragment of chipped color or stone. She'd thought of her mother, of what could still be found and preserved, of the way that anything her mother had owned was precious to her now. How it is only time that makes things precious. She hadn't been responsible for any grand finds. She'd developed a deep relationship with and appreciation of mud. The mud that had covered over these stones had also preserved them. But she had been here for some of the important days, when they found the gold, when they found the hairpin, when they found the single finger bone, and when they uncovered the girls. Look up, said Jun, and Martha obediently looked up at the inlaid ceilings. It was a miracle of mud and chemistry that the inlay had survived, but here it was. Let me show you a mystery. The ceiling above had crumbled in places, but in places it was clearly visible. There, in the center of the curved dome, was the dark red open mouth of Orpheus's wife Eurydice, screaming as she was dragged into the darkness of Hades, like bringing a guitar to the apocalypse. There, looking back as he'd been told not to, was Orpheus, clearly identifiable by his lyre. Imagine bringing a lyre into Hades. Maybe he thought they'd have all the best tunes, said Martha. Jun put her hand on Martha's warm thigh. If she was actually interested in a bit of archaeology, then this was something. Could be something. Look, over there, behind Orpheus. Half hiding behind dirty green fronds, there were two damaged figures. No heads, but evidently girls, maybe 12 and 13. One pointing, the other with her hand over her heart. Who are those girls? Said Shun. That's a mystery. None of the legends of Orpheus that we know of say he had children, or traveled with children. That's evidence of some undiscovered Orphic mythology. Martha looked at the inlaid ceiling, thinking, puzzling something out. Or it's a synthesis with another tradition, and they're Lot's daughters from the Bible. Lot's wife who looked back at Sodom when it burned. Jun pushed her so hard, she nearly fell off the altar. Get out! Did you just solve an archaeological mystery? I thought there were no real archaeology answers, just suggestions. Still, she looked pleased with herself. I mean, you could be right, you know. By this stage, there had been a lot of travel across Europe. Soldiers or enslaved people from Judea ending up in Britain. Not unthinkable. Or people they'd spoken to. We'll never know, I guess. That's how it is, said Jun. Often you never know. How do you bear it? Asked Martha. And Jun thought, oh no. If you understand this about me, you've got the whole thing. What are you doing after this? Said Jun. They went back to the flat Jun was staying in Stratford. It was a one bed over a newsagent next to a bus stop, and outside, two girls were singing along too loudly to the music in their shared helix clips. Martha kissed Jun, and the tingle passed right through Jun from her mouth to her mons. Kiss me here, where I'm normal, and maybe my life is going to come out all right. Jun said, I've got to say this. I have to. I really like you. She told her mouth to stop there, but her mouth wouldn't. And it's okay. It's all right if you don't feel it too. I just want to know, okay? If it's just like a crazy weekend, that's all right. Just level with me. Martha licked her bottom lip. I wasn't looking for this, she said. Shun's stomach went hollow. This was it. The end and another long climb back up into the sunlight after giving her heart away again too easily, too quickly. I wasn't expecting this, Martha said. And Jun had the feeling she was choosing her words very carefully. And I have a project that is kind of getting to its busy phase. But yes, this is something. Can you wait for me? Can I wait for you? I might not be able to get in touch for a while. Oh, because you're a spy? Yes, because I'm a spy. I mean, as long as it's strictly spy business, or like stuff to do with your PA job. Definitely one of those. I guess it's okay, said Jun. Because I really like you, said Martha. I think I like you more than anyone I've liked for a really long time. Then it's fine, said Jun. Then it really is fine. And they had more sex, and Jun made a terrible breakfast, and they had sex again. And then Martha had to leave, and it had been fine. As Martha's very fancy car pulled away, as Jun remembered that she'd forgotten again to ask about the gift, it had been fine. After that, for a few weeks, it had really been perfectly okay. Jun had messaged Martha a few times, She'd gotten non-committal replies. A thumbs up to a fun news story she'd sent her. Heart eyes and, "I'm traveling. See you when I'm back," to a photo of a sunset. But as weeks turned into months, Chun had increasingly come to the conclusion that all that had been kind of a cowardly way of ghosting her. And then someone shot at her in a mall in Singapore.